So, this is Uddhava speaking. Most of the 11th canto is a discussion between Uddhava and Krishna. Before Krishna disappears from the planet. We have a similar discussion between Arjuna and Krishna before the battle of Kurukshetra. And if we look at the contents, in many ways they're quite similar. But we'll see that the 11th canto has a few more particulars. It describes the devotees more fully. It describes devotional service in more detail. It also gives more details of karma, jnana, and yoga. As in fact, there's a very detailed description of Astanga Yoga in this 11th canto of Bhagavatam. So we can say it's like a more elaborate version of Bhagavad Gita in many ways. So here Uddhava is asking questions. We know, of course, that Arjuna does the same thing. He asks questions. And we look at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna describes the situation to Krishna and says, "I can't fight." And he has tears in his eyes and throws down his bow. And he says, "But I'm surrendered unto you. Please tell me what to do." So he takes Krishna as his shelter and then asks him for some advice. So we see the same attitude here with Uddhava. Both Uddhava and Arjuna are great devotees. Technically, Arjuna is considered Sakha or friend of Krishna. So he has a Sakya Rasa relationship with Krishna. There is also a mixture of Aishvarya, so it is not the same as Krishna's Sakya Rasa with Subal and others in Vrindavan. Because he also sees Krishna as God. Uddhava is considered to be in Dasya Rasa. He is also from Dwarka, Mathura and Dwarka, so he also has this idea of Aishvarya Rasa as well. And we'll see that coming out here where he says, "Jagat Prabhu, you are the master of the universe, you are the lord of Vaikuntha, you are the lord of the Purusha avatars." So he understands his position as Supreme Lord. But though he's in Dasya Rasa, and it's mixed with Aishvarya, it's not like the Dasas in Vrindavan, Uddhava's actually in a very intimate position with Krishna. Because we see he acts as a bridge between Dwarka and Mathura and Vrindavan. Krishna often sends him to act on his behalf. So when Krishna was in Mathura, then he sent Uddhava back to deliver a message to Nanda and Yasoda and even to the gopis. So that indicates he has a very close relationship with Krishna, because Krishna entrusted him with a message to the gopis, who are the highest devotees of all. So Uddhava's position actually is quite exalted. And if we look in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita also there, Uddhava has an exalted position among all the different devotees. Finally, we have devotees in the material world, and then Brahma and Shiva, and then other devotees and Prahlad, etc. And then finally we get the Rishnis, who are always associated with Krishna. And then the Rishnis say, we're not such close associates to the Lord. We don't see him except when he comes out in the assembly hall in Dwarka. And so then he disappears and we can't see him. Goes into his palaces and we don't see him anymore. Uddhava's dearer than us because he follows Krishna everywhere. And so he goes into the palaces with Krishna. He comes out to the assembly hall. He's always with Krishna. He's much dearer than we are. So of all the people in Dwarka, Uddhava is the most intimate with Krishna. A very, very close relationship with Krishna. And that was also so in Mathura. So that is, we have a very close relationship there. And that is why Krishna sent Uddhava to deliver most confidential messages to the gopis. Actually, Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu there, he describes later on, Krishna fulfills his promise and he comes back to Vrindavan after he kills Dantavakra. And then he stays in Vrindavan there. His chariot is there from Daruka, is standing there with his chariot, and then Krishna comes and associates with them, all the people in Vrindavan. They stay there for several months. And everyone's very happy. And then they look at the chariot and they think Krishna's going to go back again. So they get worried. So then Krishna sees that and says, okay, no, I'm not going back. I'll send Daruka back. But I'm going to send him back first, and he's going to bring Balaram and Rohini and Uddhava. And so then instantaneously the chariot goes back with Daruka, and Uddhava and Balaram and Rohini come. And he says, now we're all going to stay here eternally. Then he puts them in the big chariot and they all go to Goloka. So Uddhava was among those he chose to, even though he was in Dwarka, he chose to bring him to Vrindavan. And therefore he's also an eternal associate in Vrindavan. So he has a very intimate relationship with Krishna, because also he understands the nature of Vrindavan. And we see in his prayers, he says, I strive to be a follower of the gopis, actually. I understand that they have the highest relationship with Krishna, the most surrendered. So I strive to have such surrender as they have. So he really appreciated the people in Vrindavan, in particular the gopis. So his understanding of Krishna was very great, and therefore Krishna had a very intimate association with him. So when Krishna was about to disappear, then he chose Uddhava as the messenger, the one who could deliver his last message, because he was the most intimate person with Krishna in Dwarka. And then Uddhava receives all this knowledge from Krishna before he departs. So that is the context of the conversation of Krishna and Uddhava here. So as we know, in order to hear properly, the person has to be submissive. The disciple has to surrender. So that is what Arjuna did in Bhagavad Gita. I am a devotee surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Huh? He also says, I am prapanna. I am surrendered to you. So this is the attitude of Uddhava here. Now, of course, Arjuna and Uddhava are Nityasiddha devotees of the Lord. In one sense, they don't need any instructions. They have no impurities. They have no ignorance. They are eternally related with the Lord. They have pure bhakti. They have prema. Huh? So they don't need instructions as such. Huh? But according to pastimes, the Leela Shakti and Yoga Maya work in such a way that they appear to be ignorant, and therefore they surrender and say, please instruct me on this matter. So this is beneficial, of course, for the people of the material world. So because of Arjuna's so-called bewilderment, we get the Bhagavad Gita, which is beneficial for all the people of the world. And here we get Uddhava, also getting instructions which are beneficial for everyone. So we shouldn't think that actually Uddhava and Arjuna are in ignorance. Yeah? There is an ignorance, but it's created by Krishna. It is not the ignorance of the jivas in the material world. It's a little different. So Uddhava also takes the role of a disciple, and he surrenders. This, of course, is natural for Uddhava because he's also in Dasya Rasa, so he is a servant by nature. So his nature is to be very surrendered. But we see also that here he says he's very attracted to the Lord, Anurakta. He's very, very attracted to Supreme Lord. So this indicates his very close relationship with the Lord. He has a very great love and affection for Krishna. Even though he's in Dasya Rasa, he has this very intense attraction to Krishna. This is a very good quality to have that attraction. So this is eternal. This affection that Uddhava has is an eternal relationship with the Lord, and it can never be broken. So here he says, I surrender unto you. But actually, he's always surrendered. That's the nature of the Nityasiddha. They don't have to practice. They're naturally surrendered. Their very nature is to be surrendered completely and to give everything to the Supreme Lord. So that is the quality of prema, and that prema increases and increases among the different types of associates of the Lord. That surrender becomes complete in the gopis, in Madhurya Rasa. It reaches its highest level there. Of course, everybody in the spiritual world is completely surrendered to the Lord, because prema means no material attractions, complete attraction to the Supreme Lord. But in the spiritual world, even that attraction has various levels of intensity, and that is expressed by the different associates of the Lord. So the highest attraction to the Lord is in the gopis, because they are willing to sacrifice everything for Krishna. They sacrifice dharma, they're willing to sacrifice their lives and everything, their parents and their mothers and fathers and their husbands and children, whatever. They sacrifice everything for Krishna. So they are the most anurakta, and Uddhava also appreciated that they had such great attraction for Krishna that he saw that was the ideal for everyone, and therefore he aspired for such attraction also. So that is the nature of Uddhava. He has very great attraction, like the Rajavasis, even though he lived in Dwarka. So here he asks questions. First he addresses the Supreme Lord with actually many names, as Uttama Sloka, Prabhu, Purusha Daksha, Loka Daksha, Jagat Prabhu. So he's continually calling out his name. And as is explained in the purport, there's some significance here. The Purusha Adyaksha. Adyaksha means controller, or manager, ruler. And Purusha, of course, means generally Supreme Lord, but we can take this as Purusha avatars. So who are the Purusha avatars? Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Kshirodakshai Vishnu. So even though generally we consider God to be the creator of the material world, so that is Mahavishnu, etc., and then Brahma's secondary creator, even though that is so, they have authority over them. So the creator of the material world actually is not the greatest thing. Creator of the world is Mahavishnu. But he is not the ultimate form of God. He is a secondary form of God. So higher than him are the forms in the spiritual world. However, in the spiritual world, the forms also have a hierarchy. So we have the forms in Vaikuntha, and then the forms in Ayodhya, and then the forms in Goloka. Here it says the controller of Loka Adyaksha. So the controller in the Vaikuntha world, in the spiritual world, the ultimate controller in the spiritual world is Krishna. So we have Krishna, then we have all the different expansions there of, like Rama and Narsimha, everybody, and then we have the Vishnu forms there. It's all spiritual. It's all superior to Mahavishnu and Purusha avatars. But on the top of that is Krishna. So he's the controller of everybody in the spiritual world and everybody in the material world. All the forms of God in the material world, all the forms of God beyond the material world, and all the way up to the top, and then Krishna's at the top. So the forms in the material world, avatars come in the material world also. So we have Garbhadakshaya Vishnu entering into the material world after Mahavishnu creates everything. Then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters into it, and then Kshirodakshaya enters into all the jivas in the material world. And then we have the avatars appearing in the material world. So that is meant. That is the significance of Jagat Prabhu, the Lord in the material world, in the universe. Krishna is everybody. He's all of these. He is the Purusha avatars. He is all of the persons in the Vaikuntha realm. He is all the avatars in the material world. They're actually all within Supreme Lord Krishna. So it's explained when Krishna appears in this material world, all the other forms merge in his body to participate in his pastimes. And when he leaves them, they all go back to their separate abodes again. That is in the, it's like Ramachandra, for instance. He enters into Krishna, and then when Krishna's pastimes are finished, Ramachandra goes back to his abode, whatever. So everything is contained within Krishna. So he is all of the avatars in the material world, he is all the Purusha avatars, and he's all the forms in Vaikuntha, and he is the topmost of all. He is the final controller of everybody. So these addresses to the Supreme Lord Krishna here are indicative of his supreme position. So why we have to understand that, why we have to differentiate between all these different forms of God, because they're all God, and in one sense they're all equal, that is actually the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So though all of the avatars are actually listed in the first canto of Bhagavatam, then Krishna is called Swayam Bhagavan. So he is distinguished from all the rest, even though they're all God. So the unique feature of Srimad Bhagavatam is to point out that Krishna is special. So that is what Narada Muni told Vyasadeva, that all those Puranas are useless that you wrote. Everyone who's going to read these Puranas and become bewildered. They read the Shiva Purana and then you say Shiva is supreme, everyone will worship Shiva. So you're writing all these different things. Yes, that's what the Vedas do. They glorify all these different devatas and they glorify Shiva and everyone else. It's proper for people who are unqualified, but in Kali Yuga, people won't go beyond that. The method, of course, is to take people in the lower level and gradually elevate them upwards, higher and higher, from Karma Yoga to Gyan Yoga to Stanga Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. But in Kali Yuga, they'll get lost in the bottom and they'll never progress. So it's useless. So therefore, you write one work which will simply point out the highest form of a god, Krishna, and you describe his pastimes. That way the people of Kali Yuga become attracted to Krishna. Then you don't have to go through all these processes of Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Stanga Yoga, to Bhakti Yoga. Just Bhakti Yoga by worshipping Krishna. So then he wrote the Bhagavatam with Krishna as the main element. So Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. That does not mean that the other forms are false or that they are not God. No, they're also Bhagavan. So the word Swayam Bhagavan means here the form of God that manifests all of the qualities fully. It does not mean the other forms don't have the qualities, but they do not manifest them. Just like the Pratipat and the Dvitiya and the Tritiya do not manifest all the moonlight, but the full moon does. It's all the moon, but different degrees of light manifest. So the different forms will manifest different amounts of qualities according to their particular leelas. But Krishna displays all of the qualities in full. So whatever qualities we see in the other forms, they're also in Krishna. Plus, Krishna has more. So therefore, Krishna is most attractive because he has all qualities. Whatever is in everybody else, he has those qualities, but he has more. So Krishna is more attractive. Plus, he's more merciful. We depend on mercy of God, but Krishna has the most mercy. So these two factors are very essential for the most fallen people of Kali Yuga. So therefore, even the fallen people can take to the process of bhakti by worshipping Krishna. So that is the whole idea of Bhagavan, to point out the special position of Krishna. And that, of course, is mentioned here by using these different words. You are actually the controller of the Purusha avatars. You're the controller of all those in the Vaikunthas and the spiritual world also. You're higher than them. In this material world, you're the ultimate form as well. So in this way, he points out that Krishna is the only object of worship for everybody, and of course himself. He's the complete form, most wonderful form. So that is the significance of Uddhava here addressing Krishna by these different names, to show his ultimate position. We may wonder, how is it that Krishna will have all these powers of show all these powers, because he's only in Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan he hides his powers. So how can he have all the powers of Mahavishnu and his creator of the world, because he doesn't display himself as the creator of the material world at all in Vrindavan? He hides that and he's just a cowherd boy. And all the people in Vrindavan, they think Krishna's just a little boy. He's herds the cows. How can he have more power than Ramchandra and Parsaram and all these other persons, whatever? But if we look closely, we'll see actually Krishna does display powers in Vrindavan also. He kills these demons. He kills Putana and Trinavarta and Sakarasura and Agasura and Denukasura and all these other demons. So he kills demons without any effort at all. And he shows he is the creator of everything. He is beyond the creator of Mahavishnu. So this is displayed in the Brahma Mohana Leela. What does he show Brahma? He shows that he is actually the source of all the Vishnu forms who are the source of all the different universes. Suddenly Brahma sees that all the calves and cowherd boys are Vishnu forms, and the Vishnu forms are creators of universes. And how many cowherd boys and calves were there? Billions. There were billions of Vishnus there, but those Vishnu forms are all coming from Krishna. Brahma understood that Krishna is everything here. Krishna actually could have simply shown that all these forms are me, and then when he looked at all the cows and the calves and the cowherd boys, he saw forms of Krishna. But no, he saw forms of Vishnu. Why? To show that he is the controller of all the universes and all the Vishnu forms there, and all the Brahmas who come from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu within the universe. Krishna is actually the source of all of these. So of course Krishna can expand his form as Krishna so much. In Rasa Leela, Krishna expanded his form into 3 billion forms for all the gopis. And in Dwarka, he expands himself every day into 16,108 forms in all the different palaces. He could expand himself infinitely in that same form, but in this particular case, he showed all Vishnu forms to indicate that actually he has more power than all these Vishnu forms. Brahma was thinking, oh, Krishna's not God because he's not like Vishnu. Because Vishnu's up there in Brahma Loka, yeah, and he receives the offerings of sacrifice with great pomp and Vedic mantras, etc. And here is Krishna accepting the food with his cowherd boys. He takes the food in his left hand and his right hand and drops all over his body, and he's putting it in his mouth and he's throwing it to the cowherd boys. So that doesn't look like God. So Vishnu must be God. How can this Krishna be God? So then Krishna showed him, I am the source. This form in Vrindavan is superior to all the Vishnu forms that you can imagine. Not only your form, but all the other Vishnu forms in all the other universes. I'm superior to that. So this took place in Vrindavan. So Krishna shows his superiority, his more power than others. That's how he shows he's Purusha Daksha. He is the controller of all the Purusha avatars. And so he showed that to the Brahma Mohana in Vrindavan. Of course, in Dwarka, he can show his powers because they understand that Krishna is God, so he shows powers there more. But even in Vrindavan, he will show powers, more powers than anywhere else. So that form in Vrindavan is the ultimate form. Even though Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, his form in Dwarka is only called Purna, and his form in Mathura is Purnatara, and his form in Vrindavan is Purnatama. It's the most complete, most complete. Highest form of completeness. So there he shows all of his powers, ultimately. But that power is insignificant. The people of Vrindavan don't care for power. Whenever they see Krishna powers, they discard it. They forget about it. They make an excuse for it. It's not Krishna. Krishna's our son. He doesn't have powers like this. So actually, Vishnu comes and helps us. This is who's doing it. Vishnu is doing it, but Krishna's our son. So, like that. So they don't give any regard to powers. So Krishna shows more powers in Vrindavan than anywhere else, but the real significance is his sweetness. That is the significance of Vrindavan. So the sweet form of Krishna is considered to be the highest form, and those qualities are considered to be the ultimate. So therefore we have the a sweet form, Madhurya Rupa, the different types of devotees, surrounded by sweet devotees such as Yasoda, Nanda, and the gopis, and the cowherd boys, and sweet pastimes. The pastimes in Vrindavan are the center of the Bhagavatam. So they are considered to be the ultimate thing, the most relishable. So when in the beginning, it's described that the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit, liquid fruit, galitam phalam, liquid fruit of the tree of the Vedas, the fruit of all the Vedas, the Vedic tree, kalpa vriksha of the Vedas. The ripest liquid sweet fruit is Bhagavatam. Mm. So that essence is in the Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna. That's where we get the highest sweetness. So that sweetness was appreciated by Uddhava. He could appreciate that. Others could not. Vrishnis cannot appreciate it. Vasudeva and Devaki cannot appreciate it. They're trying to hold Krishna and say, you can't go back to Vrindavan. They know that if he goes there, he'll stay there and won't come back, so they never want him to go. Mm-hmm. But they can't appreciate it. And so when they're in, when the Vrajavasis go to Kurukshetra to meet Krishna again, then Rohini and Devaki, they see Yasoda there with Yasoda and Nanda with Krishna and Balaram. And they are actually, Devaki is shocked because she says, how do Yasoda and Nanda have such love for my child? It's my child. I gave birth to this child. I'm the mother. But she has more attraction for Krishna than I have. Mother Yasoda is so absorbed in Krishna that she was shocked. And then she said, well, actually, Mother Yasoda, is very nice. You have attraction for my child. And Yasoda didn't even hear her. So she gave up speaking and just left because Mother Yasoda was so happy on seeing Krishna. She went into some sort of, you know, a trance state. So her attraction for Krishna was much superior to Devaki's. Devaki could not understand the attraction in Vrindavan at all. So it is something very special. Uddhava could understand. The other people couldn't. Other Rishnis could not understand. But Uddhava could understand that. So he understood the real nature of Krishna's sweetness. And therefore, that's why he says, I'm surrendered to you and I'm very attracted to you, anurakta. So he had a sweet relationship also with Krishna in a similar manner. And he was completely surrendered. So he asks about the devotees. What are the qualities of the devotees? And what type of bhakti do the devotees recommend as the process? So in other words, he's asking about who is a devotee and what is sadhana bhakti. These are both important, very important questions. We must know the process by which we get perfection, prema. So that is, the process is called sadhana bhakti. We have to know what that is, and otherwise we cannot practice properly. And we have to know who devotees are, because this is very important. As the previous verses indicated, one gets devotion because of devotees. So not one gets the cause of devotion or faith is devotees, and then the progress in devotion is also caused by devotees. So then in sadhana bhakti, the cause of advancement is association with devotees. So it's very important to understand who is a devotee. So later on, Krishna will describe the qualities of the devotee. But if we look in Bhagavad Gita, there also the qualities of a devotee are described in 12th chapter. But of all the qualities, like humility and whatever, and equality and all this, what is the ultimate quality? The main quality is surrender, the devotion. That's the main quality. That's the primary quality. Everything else is secondary. So we do not strive to cultivate the secondary qualities. We strive to be devotional, the main quality. And automatically, the other qualities are manifested. So that is, of course, one of the qualities of bhakti. That is subhada. So subhada, one of the meanings is manifestation of good qualities. So all good qualities result from becoming a devotee, from developing one's devotion. But accordingly as one advances, the more devotion one has, obviously the more qualities one will have, and the less advanced, less qualities one will have. So we don't make a separate endeavor to cultivate these qualities. So it's different, a little different from the material world. In the material world, we have to cultivate qualities in order to be civilized. But those qualities are material qualities. They're in the gunas. They are mostly sattvic qualities. So we're taught to be very sattvic in the material world. Don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat. Show compassion and be merciful. Show tolerance. So these are sattva-gun qualities. So these are the qualities which we're taught in the material world, which are good, because sattva is better than rajas and tamas. Compassion is better than selfishness and violence. So good in the material world. And therefore Krishna also encourages this. He encourages sattva over rajas and tamas in the last chapters of Bhagavad Gita. But material qualities are also simply material. They're temporary things. They're gunas. They change. So that is not what the devotee wants. The devotee wants something which is permanent. So spiritual qualities naturally develop with the bhakti. Bhakti is eternal. And the qualities that manifest in the devotee through bhakti are also eternal. So when one gets perfection in prema and one develops a relationship with Krishna, then one manifests all sorts of wonderful qualities. So those are spiritual qualities. Those are eternal qualities. And each individual will develop a particular combination of qualities because he's an individual in relation to Krishna in the spiritual world. So that's eternal. So the qualities which the devotee develops are eternal qualities, spiritual qualities. They're not material things. And the qualities we cultivate in the material world, those are sattvic qualities, which are temporary. They're material. They're better than tamasic or rajasic qualities, but still they're material. So there's a difference in these qualities. So these qualities manifest because of the bhakti. They are dependent on bhakti. So they cannot be developed independently. If we develop the bhakti, they develop. If we develop the qualities, how can they develop unless the bhakti develops? So the main element is the bhakti. So that is how the qualities of a devotee manifest. So in considering the different types of devotees, the types of devotees are actually based upon the amount of devotion. One of the less devotion is classified in one of the more devotions, and one of the higher devotions called an uttama. So that's how they are classified, not according to external manifestation of qualities. Those naturally follow. So these are all very good questions that Uddhava asks, because we have to understand the nature of the devotees in order to associate with devotees. If we don't know what a quality of a devotee is, we cannot associate with a devotee. And a devotee has to associate with different devotees in different ways. So the Madhyamadhikari associates with devotees, avoids materialists, and among devotees, he differentiates those who are less. He gives instruction. Those who are equal, he acts in a friendly manner. Those who are superior, he takes instruction. So that's the cause of his advancement. So he has to understand the different types of devotees also. So all of these things are necessary for our advancement. So that is why I would have asked these questions. Okay, any question?
Why is the emphasis on the Bhagavad Gita in the Mahabharata as opposed to the Uddhava Gita in the Bhagavatam, considering that the Bhagavatam version is more, more
important, detailed? And
yeah, more detailed.
Yeah. Why? Why it's like that? I suppose because it is general, more general. This particular, the 11th canto, we can say maybe is not done systematically in the same way. The topics may occur in different places, where we'll find it's grouped very nicely, and a logical development is taking place in Bhagavad Gita, where the questions and answers come, and then says, okay, first he gives a little Sankhya, then he goes back to Karma Yoga and gradually develops that whole theme until the sixth part, and then he gives a little Astanga Yoga there. Then he goes into the whole thing on Bhakti, then he goes back to Jnana again. So it's a little bit systematic the way he develops there. Here, it's a little bit not done that systematic way. So maybe for that reason. The other, of course, is that it's probably a little more concise for people in general. So for the general public, it's more useful. This has got a lot of details, like deity worship is in there, a lot of deity worship things, and a lot of things like that are in there. There's a whole section on merging in Brahman for the Gyanis, and there's a whole other section on yoga, and with the chakras and everything, and like this, you know. So a little more specific, so it's a little more detailed exposition. So it's a similar, the similar topics are covered, but more in detail, so I would suspect that because that's a little more concise and it doesn't go into all the details, it's more popular with people. Only for that reason. Well, we cannot say it's superior, obviously.
In the spiritual world, there's Goloka.
Yeah, they're all three are there. Yeah. And we have Dwarka. That's described as being next to Gokul. Like, actually, Goloka also has parts to it. We have an Aishwarya Goloka on the outside, according to Brahma Samhita, in the square area. This Aishwarya Goloka, where Krishna's there with the cowherd boys, but they understand he's God also, so it's kind of a mixture of Aishwarya with Raja Leela. And then in the middle, we have in the center, we have Gokul, where there's no Aishwarya, like that. So that's the central portion. So it's said that the Navadvipa is kind of right next to that Gokul somewhere. That's not described there, but that's how it's, I think, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think, says that. So that's one thing. And then the other Mathura, then we have Mathura and Dwarka also, which are Aishwarya aspects. It's not really described where they are, but obviously they're not, they're outside of the Goloka area. Separate areas. So Krishna has different forms there also. And as we go from Mathura to Dwarka, then the Aishwarya becomes a little more and more prominent in Dwarka. So that's why it's considered less than the Mathura form, actually. Yeah.
You mentioned that Krishna is the most merciful, but
and Lord Chaitanya.
Lord Chaitanya magnifies that.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's actually the most merciful, even more merciful than Krishna. So he's considered non-different from Krishna, like Swayam Bhagavan. Yeah.
How do you understand it with the qualitative oneness? How do you understand it vis a vis the qualitative oneness?
Qualitative oneness meaning?
We are one in quality with Krishna, but quantitatively we are not one.
So quality, of course, when you say one in quality, that, of course, is a very general term. It doesn't mean we have all the qualities of Krishna. The jiva can only have 50. Out of 64, of course, that's an approximation also. And even there, they are in minute quantities, minute quantities of 50 of those of the 64 qualities that jiva can possess, manifest in the spiritual world. So it is a rather general proposition when we say, you know, one in quality. Of course, eternity is there, bliss is there, knowledge is there, the general things are there, and then only 50 of the 64 are there also. So it's not that we're actually equal in all the qualities, either in, you know, type or in quantity. Much less, actually. With the
jivas?
Oh well, the jivas by nature are individuals. That's the nature of a jiva. He's an individual consciousness. So individual means he has a separate identity, therefore he must be different from another jiva. If they have exactly the same identity and the same likes and dislikes, then they would be one, they wouldn't be two. So by nature jivas are different. So they have common qualities, plus they have a few which are different. So there's common spiritual qualities that everybody will have. Krishna will have, Radha will have, the Sakas will have, the Dasas will have, people in Vaikuntha will have. There's common qualities for everybody. Then there's all the particular qualities. Yeah? So the qualities of the gopis are not the same as the qualities of the Sakas, obviously. Otherwise the Sakas would be gopis, but they're not. They're different qualities. Their love is different. Their perception of Krishna is different. So that they have different qualities. Huh? And the Dasas there are different. They have a different perception of Krishna. So there's automatically differences there. And even in one rasa, there'll be differences. So Ujjwal Nilamani, there it's described, Rupa Goswami describes all the varieties of gopis. They're all different. Different types of love and different amounts of love and different tastes in their love, even though it's all Madhurya rasa. There's so many varieties there also. So they're all individuals.
And are these cultivated or are they just discovered after sadhana?
Well, manifest, we can say. Manifest in the heart.
Just on the point you're talking about the different qualities, mm-hmm. Is there actually different qualities or different quantities of the various qualities?
Both.
It's like the modes of nature,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we can say in one sense maybe it's different amounts of prominence like that. So, for instance, in Madhurya Rasa, everything is present in one sense of all the other, but there's a prominence given to the intensity of their love or something like that. So, yes, we can say that maybe they all have the qualities, but there's a prominence in one more than the other. We can say it like that. Which creates the variety, we can say.
And we are told that as a sadhak, when you are born, you want to go to spiritual world, you should not think about what, like madhuriness or anything. Just increase your devotion, and Krishna will decide when we go there whether you go to madhuriness.
Well, in Raghunuga, no. You choose your particular bhava within Raghunuga, and you cultivate that particular bhava, and then you go up. In Vaidhi Bhakti, basically, it's all dasya. So if you decide on dasya, then or Vaidhi Bhakti, and you stick to that, then your relationship is going to end up as a dasya rasa somewhere, either in Vaikuntha or in Goloka or wherever.
Raghunuga, we can choose.
Huh?
From Raghunuga, we can choose.
Yeah.
It's not already determined.
Well, we can say both, maybe. But nevertheless, it's an individual choice we make. It's not that somebody tells us, oh, you are this, but somehow we gravitate towards a certain type of we're attracted to. Whatever it is.
You must be able to change.
Once you cultivate something and it becomes strong, and then you go into bhava, that naturally goes to prema, so it doesn't change. Once you get into bhava, you suddenly don't change over in prema to something else. In other words, if we're worshipping Krishna now, and suddenly when you get to prema, you end up with Vishnu or Rama or whatever. Like that. So generally what you cultivate as your sadhana, that becomes very strong, and that becomes your the object of love for you. So you don't change that. It keeps developing in that direction.
You were saying that Uddhava is in Dasya Rasa, and Arjuna is in Sakya. But it appears that Uddhava had a more intimate.
He could understand. Yeah, he could understand the people of Vrindavan. That type of love. So that's why Krishna sent him rather than anybody else.
So even though he's in Dasya Rasa, he's still. It almost seems like it doesn't really matter in one sense, because he's still got that. He still has an intimate connection. He says, I love you.
Well, there's dasas in Vrindavan also. Krishna has servants in Vrindavan, so they're all covered by Madhurya Rasa there.
Covered means they're connected to it in some way or another?
Well, that means that it's all very sweet. In other words, they are dasas of Krishna, but they don't see him as God, even though it's dasya. Whereas in the Rishnis have a dasya ras or even sakya ras or whatever, but it, they see him as God, so it's a little different. You know, it's not madhurya, it's not sweet. An interesting example of individuality in the gopis is that we have the famous groups, the Chandravali group and the Radha group. and Radha's group is the angry group. They're the stubborn group. And Chandravali is the very obedient group. You know, so they're both gopis, but they have very contrasting relationship with Krishna. What's that?
The end of Buddhism is usually the Virajareva.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I don't know if it's Shastric or not, but it's something like that. Obviously, they're cultivating some impersonal type of relationship, so it doesn't get into Vaikuntha, definitely. Somewhere not up far, that far, whether it's Brahmajyoti or somewhere preceding that, I don't know. But
the activities in Virajareva are not mentioned
anymore? No, well, it's obviously not personal, that's all. Yeah, it's just they don't discuss where they go in our shastras. But it's something like liberation because there is a denial of the material world. Stop desires, stop ahankara, stop all these things. So then you'll end up in a position which is liberated, but not personal. Gokul.
Since the Upanishads, Guru Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to immensely, we all love for it. As followers of Upanishads, is our goal, is the devotee's goal fixed as Goloka or?
Gokul. It's a Madhurya, Gokul.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the ultimate.
We are also told that when we are worshipping Radha or Radha Krishna, then we accept our worship as Lakshmi Narayana for presence in all and present. So.
So that's mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti, I think it's commentary on the Nectar Devotion there, where he says that if you worship Radha and Krishna, but you worship in Vaidhi Bhakti, and you continue to do that with that attachment to the Vaidhi, and then you get into Bhava and you're still attached to that Vaidhi, then eventually go to Aishwarya Goloka, where you see Krishna in, you have as a cowherd boy, but you also have reverence for him. So you go to that. And if you want that without that, then you have to kind of switch over to the Raghunuga type of attitude where it's you get rid of the Aishwarya. That's also mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita there, where actually Raghunuga is the gateway to get into Raja. Says that. Lord Chaitanya says that.
It appears then that one has to have a fairly intricate understanding of these details.
To get the right destination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To make sure the meditation is.
Yeah.
Is that a matter of just study, or is it a matter of service and
both?
Then kripa, you know, mercy?
All things. Study alone will not create that. Taste. The taste is created by our service and our sadhana and whatever, mercy. So that it's a combination of all that. We need the knowledge, but then we also have to have the association, and we have to have the service and all these things. Together, then we develop taste in a certain direction.
Because you could have all of that theoretical understanding.
Yeah, and still not go anywhere.
And Gopi Shaw criticizes devotees, you know, for studying so many books. And he makes that comment, you know, it's just like you study all of these books, but then you sit on them and pass through on them because you don't actually follow the teachings.
Yeah, so the faith has to be there to begin with to make us understand in the proper way, not in an intellectual way. And then the association has to be there to encourage us to actually practice. Otherwise, it becomes useless. Mm-hmm. So association is important.
What is the importance of understanding the distinction between Shruti and Smriti?
Ultimately, nothing, because we take the Bhagavatam as the ultimate. It's important for others because they take the Mayavadis, the Shankar's followers, take Shruti as superior to Smriti. So if there's a controversy, they'll accept Shruti rather than Smriti. So they'll take Upanishad's authority over Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, ultimately.
But won't we also?
No. We'll take Bhagavatam as supreme.
Jiva Goswami and Baladev Gajibhushan say that Bhagavatam is Shruti.
Yeah, well that, they won't accept that, obviously. The Shankarites won't accept that. We take it as the ultimate, so therefore it is equivalent to Shruti. It's superior to Shruti, actually, because it is the sum and substance of all the scriptures. Yeah? So we take it as superior, actually. But yes, we take it as equivalent to Shruti. But technically, Shruti is something which is eternal and unchanging and never written. Whereas Bhagavatam is, and all the Puranas are written by Vedavyas at a certain point in time and changeable with different kalpas of time.
Could you argue that he manifests them, he doesn't write them? Isn't that the argument?
Well, also, it includes history in it, and the history keeps changing in every kalpa. So therefore, you have to change them. So it's not exactly the same history every kalpa. So there'll be changes there, and even Krishna's pastimes may change in every kalpa. So that every kalpa that in every day of Brahma that Vyasadeva appears, you'll write something slightly different in the different Puranas, because the history changes. Whereas Vedas, it's always the same. The same syllables are there.
So.
Technically no. But it's that we can't say inferior or superior. That's Jiva Goswami's argument in Tapasandarbha, because it is Smriti, it's not inferior. Smriti is the commentary on the Shruti by Vyasa, so it must be equal. If it's not, then how can it be a proper commentary? It cannot be useful if it's less, so therefore it says equal.
So for us, what's the importance of understanding the difference between Shruti and Smriti?
Nothing. Doesn't matter for us. The distinction is made mainly by Shankar to show the superiority of Shruti over Smriti, because his arguments are based on Upanishads, and Upanishads, the direction as he's pointing it, is impersonal.
And of course, the Bhagavatam points us in the direction of personality.
Yeah, opposite.
You said that Krishna's pastime can be changed.
He'll have slightly different pastimes, not completely different, but slightly different pastimes. So we have here what Krishna did 5,000 years ago here. So when he has the pastimes in the next kalpa or the previous kalpa, not exactly the same. It's not like a stereotype type of thing, you know. So some of the details are going to be different. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a few extra demons that creep into Vrindavan and he kills a few extra ones or a few less or whatever, you know.
I guess it's mentioned in Krishna book or something, or Nigacharya explained that Krishna is born, he appears, then immediately he appears in another universe.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. In that sense,
so even the other universes, there may be slight differences. Slight differences may be there.
Which would support that notion that we were discussing the other day of.
Variety.
Ever new.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it's all the same.
Yeah, everyone is predictable. Oh, we saw that one already. Do something new.
They're offering the same prayers again.
Yeah. Everything's always surprising.
In the different expansions, you know, the quadruple chaturvyuha, is there any reason why there's a four and then there's another four?
Not really. I don't think
that's just just how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is, I guess. Of course, we can say maybe there's several groups to show there's different levels of expansion. Just like we have in the material world, we have the three forms, the Purusha avatars, on three levels. So we have one on the greater level, Mahavishnu, over all of Prakriti. Yeah. Then we have within the universe, of everything in the universe, we have Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then for each jiva, we have the Kshiradakshaya form. So like inner expansions according to the level, you know, like that. So Vaikuntha, we can say the upper level and the lower level of Vaikuntha, also expansion.
They're all ultimately coming from Balaram.
Yeah. Okay. Hare Krishna.